welcome to another edition of the Media Schwitz. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. And joining me in New York is Rafat Ali, also celebrating his birthday today. Happy birthday.
Thanks, Mark. I knew you would bring that up.
I couldn't let that slide.
Thank you. I am...
You have a surprise coming up, I think, right?
I do, which I don't know what it is. So I'm excited about that.
We'll have to find out on Facebook. You can't really have a birthday without Facebook anymore, right?
I mean, it's like flooded with messages as it is with everybody these days. Yeah, that's. I find that people sort of turn their nose up on it, like, it doesn't really mean anything. I feel like it's a small. If anybody's taking 5 seconds out of their life to post that or whatever, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, that's more than what they would have otherwise. I think it's fine. I just feel like if you are the birthday person and you're getting all those messages, you do feel special. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's kind of like built-in specialness.
Yeah. Yes. So it's if nothing else, that will always be there. That's the Facebook messages will always be there.
And we'll never have that situation where you're just kind of walking around your work saying, like, hinting to people, like, today is a special day, and then everyone forgets your birthday. That, like, that fear and paranoia that everyone
that's
has.
That's never gonna happen anymore.
It will
that's
never
true.
Happen so. in the Facebook age.
Yeah, unless you, of course, hide your birthday, which some people do, of course.
Yeah. So, because it is your birthday, we won't, embarrass you too much, but we did want to actually talk about something that was near and dear to your heart, and that's photography. And
for the last 2 years, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, tell everybody a little bit about, I mean, I've also been very much into photography myself, but is that just from traveling that you just got into it, or is it something you've always had as a hobby?
Yeah, not always. I mean, just in the last 2 years since I left, it's going to be almost 2 years since I left Pay Content, and as you know, and a lot of people know through Twitter and Facebook, that I've been on a sabbatical and traveling quite a bit all over the world, and
right.
Just as everybody does these days, I took a camera along the first time, and I started. I mean, I never really, as a journalist, I'd never really done photography. I know a lot of journalists have done photojournalism at some point in their life. I never really did, and I feel like it was a delayed photojournalism kind of comeback for me. If I was not writing, then I was doing journalism some other way. And when I saw people responding to the photographs that I was taking on Facebook and Twitter, it sort of course, eggs you on, and you do more of it, and you learn more. You learn more about cameras and photography and stuff, and of course, digital equipment has become so cheap. And so it was, I think, a mixture of all factors. I feel like as a journalist, you have a better eye, or you develop an eye to see the story in every photograph.
Right.
And I think that sort of helped me as a journalist who has never had formal training in like photography and stuff. So I think that's been a part of my sort of discovery of photography.
Yeah, I mean, I also kind of played around with different cameras and SLRs and compact and point and shoot, and now camera phones too. There's just so many different ways to play around with photography and to try to work it into what you're doing in journalism. I mean, and then I've also covered a lot of the way that the photography world and professional photographers have changed the way that they do their work with the advent of digital photography 10, 15 years ago, and then just the way that photojournalists, have been kind of really challenged to deal with the onslaught of so many amateur photographers to kind of still prove their worth to news organizations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole, it's such a big topic, and there's so many threads to it, including stock photography, which probably no industry has seen a decline as fast as stock photography has done over the last few years, and I'm sure our guests will talk about that too. Of course, the rise of iPhone and how that changed everything. On there were cameras before on phones, of course, forever, right? I think Nokia was the first one who saw the potential, and then iPhone and the apps that came on iPhone took it to the next level. So it's a whole so and then all the you would have thought that, okay, what could be the next? And then Instagram and others came along. And then Pinterest, which is based on photography to a large, or on photos to a large part, and Facebook, which bought Instagram. So there's so many threads, and it's going to, I think, continue to play for a long time. There are a lot of still a lot of investments to be done in that sector.
No question. Well, let's bring on our panel and we'll touch on a lot of these subjects and see what these guys have to say. So Gregor Holenda is a top commercial photographer, Photoshop expert, and he also races motorcycles. He's run his own New York photo studio since 1994, previously worked under Gregory Heisler and at the Greeley Tribune. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And Brian Storm is founder and executive producer of the award-winning multimedia production studio MediaStorm, based in Brooklyn. Prior to launching MediaStorm, Storm spent 2 years as vice president of news, multimedia, and assignment services for Corbis. Before that, he was director of multimedia at MSNBC.com. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks, Mark.
And then Thomas Hawk, who considers himself to be a photography factory, is also active on social media, including Google Plus. He's also the co-host of the photography video show Photo Talk Plus, and is working on a photo project about the 100 top 100 cities in the U.S. Welcome, Thomas.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
So we were talking about I was talking to Rafat. It's his birthday today, so we should all give him a big happy birthday.
Please, can you embarrass me more, guys? But hey, guys, how are you?
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
He is really become kind of a photo buff over the last couple of years, and one of the things that's happened for him is, as he travels, he's been sharing a lot of his photos on social media, in Facebook, through Twitter. We've all seen kind of the rise of Flickr. How have you guys seen social media kind of change the work that you've done as photographers? Thomas, do you want to jump in
Yeah, sure.
first?
I've been involved in social media with photography for a while. I got on Flickr pretty early back in 2004, the year that it started. I've been involved in most online photo sharing communities. I would say most recently it's just absolutely exploded. I think Google Plus coming on the scene, which is really the hottest place, I think, for photographers and social media right now, has been a big part of that. Facebook has seriously ramped up their photos pages and their photo section. Used to be tiny little thumbnails on Facebook. Flickr, sleepy old Flickr, is finally back to innovating. They came out with a new uploader yesterday, a new justified view earlier this year. Of course, everybody knows about the Instagram billion-dollar sale to Facebook. I think it's very, very hot, social media and photos right now, and I think it's really just the beginning. Photos are how we communicate. Photos are how we talk about ourselves. It's becoming a new language, how we share who we are. And, I think it's real super, super exciting and just the beginning. And there's going to be lots of commercial opportunities and lots of other great things coming out of it.
Why do you, now you put a lot of your photos out when you put them online, you're putting them under kind of a Creative Commons license, for non-commercial use. Why did you decide to do that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I love the Creative Commons license, non-commercial, because I think it gives you a way to get your work out there. I think more than anything, I'm an artist, and I think artists want their work to be seen. As an artist, you want your work to be seen to as large and as big of a possible audience as you can, all over the world. And that's why I publish in my work in these various places, is because I want everybody in the world to be able to see it. And, having a more liberal license like Creative Commons allows people to use your work and share your work and distribute your work in non-commercial ways. that inevitably drives back lots of commercial application back to you. So I sell photos, every week, stock photos and different things. People find me on the internet or prints for hotels or for big projects. And it's largely because so many of my photos are out there and they're spread so widely to so many different people.
Gregor, would you ever consider doing that, or have you done that before, license your stuff with Creative Commons?
No, and in fact, I would probably take a completely opposite view to Thomas on that. I specifically have kept myself off of Flickr. I'm not keen on their rights. Usually for clients and stuff, I'll put things on SmugMug, but I'm actually a little bit different than that because I'm not really putting myself out there in a million different places. While I agree with Thomas that, you know, one of your goals is to have your images seen, for me, one of my goals is to be paid for my work. And I don't want to lose control of my images. And perhaps it's a different sort of thing because I'm working maybe in a different style or whatever, a higher level with clients. I believe that it is necessary. There is that whole, I'm on Facebook almost completely as an obligation with clients because I do find work from that, from the social interaction with different people and stuff. I don't want to say it's begrudging. I do see its point, but I guess take a different viewpoint on that.
What do you think, Brian? I mean, where do you fall down in this? Do you think that, I'm guessing this is something that's just a very personal or business decision that photographers make as far as, you know, do I want to put things out Creative Commons or do I want to worry about kind of protecting things more?
Yeah, I guess I fall on the side of protecting things more. I still think rights is something that we should be very focused on managing. It's our livelihood. There's obviously two schools of thought. If you put it out for free and people can use it, then, you know, you're never going to get paid for it, but you might generate other business opportunities as a result. I think that's a slippery road to go down.
But this is Rafat. Any of you can answer. I think, Brian, you're being sort of the media for a long time. You may want to answer this first. Do you see some parallels of the debate that's happening between, I guess, you guys right now and generally in the industry to what's happened in the music industry and the newspaper industry, or which you guys at some part have done some work in that industry as well, as like protecting too much protection, but the consumers are doing an end around you, and how do you sort of balance that?
I personally think it's actually coming back the other direction. I mean, Apple just sold its 25 billionth app. I mean, people are starting to pay for content in the digital space. And, you know, the idea that everything should be free on the internet is, that's what got us into this problem in the first place, to be honest with you. Everyone's trying to back off that now and go the other direction and say, look, this stuff is expensive. It's expensive to do reporting. It's expensive to do post-production. We need to create a business model so that we can sustain our best storytellers and our most important publications. There has to be some business model for them to stay alive.
I think there can absolutely be a business model under Creative Commons, and I think there are a lot of photographers that are doing it quite successfully. Two that come to mind immediately, Trey Ratcliffe, who's a good friend of mine, who also licenses everything Creative Commons, and is a full-time professional photographer, has gotten enormous amounts of business and has been one of the most successful professional photographers out there by doing just that. And another individual who's been quite active on Google+, one of the most active photographers on Google+, and puts his stuff up there all the time, very involved in social media, would be Scott Jarvie. And Scott is another individual who has a full-time photographer. Now, he's a wedding photographer, so it's a little different, but has gotten an enormous number of clients because he's out there. And because, you know, I know I've referred him clients. I don't shoot weddings myself, but lots of other people have, because he's active and because he's social and he's on these sites.
Brian, let's talk a little bit more about, as a photographer, you know, you've kind of pushed into doing more multimedia and video. Do you believe that a lot of photographers are going to, let's say coming up, newer photographers are going to be more into multimedia than they were in the past and doing video as well.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time at universities right now. I do a lot of speaking and consulting with universities on their curriculum, and there's no question that they're teaching these kids everything. And that's good and bad. It's good because they have a respect and an appreciation for all the possibilities. It's bad in that, they're kind of a mile wide and an inch deep. They're not amazing expert storytellers at any one thing. They're shooting video, they're learning flash. I mean, it's a lot to ask of someone at this stage. But I think, that generation is going to come up with a digital tool set that we probably didn't when we were coming out of school. I mean, when I came out of school, I was still shooting film, we were still in a dark room. So it's a different world for sure. What they lack is like the same thing we lacked when we came out of school. They weren't seasoned storytellers yet. They hadn't done, enough of any one thing to be truly great at it. And I think ultimately the long term here is we're going to come back to a place where we collaborate. It's very hard for one person to do all the things that you can do in the multimedia space. So the concept of, partnering with people that are better at certain things than you are and working together to produce pieces, I think that's the model that we're trying to build out at MediaStorm.
Gregor, have you seen that in your work, or have you been able to just stick with photography, or have you ever collaborated on video projects or multimedia projects?
No, I definitely am starting to do more video. I guess for me, it's like Photoshop is such a deep language, and that when I started to do video, it was a bit of a realization that the last thing I want to do is to learn Final Cut. It's a giant program, and it's a complete another world to be an editor, and the editing is so important to that. So a lot of what I've done in my video is more directing and shooting, and then working with somebody else to do the editing. But I definitely feel like it's going in that direction. Still photographers are probably eating away at the low end of the video market as the, iStock and the low end of what great point and shoot cameras and low end consumer cameras have eliminated from the low end of the still market.
What lessons do you think any of you do you think sort of the I think stock photography is probably one of the fastest industries to sort of go into the toilet. What lessons are you guys, I guess, learning from that, and as you're charting out your sort of next phase of your career and the work you're doing, are there lessons to be learned that photographer should be looking at?
Yeah, I think that your work has value. I think that that's one of the dangers to me is that when I looked at getting into stock, I started looking at what the top people were making in stock, and it was less money than I make in a normal year. And these were the very top people within a lot of the stock. So if your full-time job of producing all of these images is not going to really produce a giant income out of it, I think you have to look at how you can market yourself in a way that is valuable, and what is it that I can, offer that is not something that you will find on iStock. And to me, that's a lot of, the production value, which I think is one of the things that was mentioned in some of the articles, is the ability to tell the story, to produce and bring together a team that can solve a complicated problem.
Personally, I'm super excited about the stock industry. I think it's got a long ways to go, though. One of the things that I like about it is that the gatekeepers aren't there anymore. I mean, it used to be you had to be with a big agency or something like that, and now pretty much anybody, whether it's iStock Photo or there are over 10,000 photographers on Flickr that are part of the Getty deal, and I think it's super exciting that somebody that years ago just took pictures in their backyard can now, even if it's only $300 a month, they can make a little bit of money that goes along with their hobby. So, I mean, I know that that kind of erodes and might upset some full-time professional photographers, but I think it's great that it gets spread out.
What about, so let's, one of the things that we mentioned earlier about is Instagram. And so what is your opinion on, well, for, I guess, Instagram specifically and the general phenomena of of the democratization of photography and filters along with it.
This is Brian. I'd like to pick up a little bit on what Thomas just said. I think it's connected to Instagram. I think one of the things that's so exciting right now is that everyone does have the tools and everyone does have the distribution. So all we're left with now is who's saying something that matters. Who's delivering quality information? Who's delivering, you know, elegant experience? And the fact that everybody's in the game, I think, is good for us because they're shooting pictures, they're producing video, they're publishing themselves. So when they see something amazing, they know what it is. They're like, whoa, that's like at a different gear. You know, that's like really professional, high-end stuff. So I think quality is the answer. I think that's the way to separate yourself. I think that's the way to have strong syndication. You have to be amazing at what you do, and social media is simply gasoline on that fire. If you're saying something important, people are going to spread it for you. And I would argue that social media is the new front page. I mean, if you think about how you get information now, it's being curated and sent to you. And what are people curating and sending to you? Really funny stuff or really high quality. And photographers, we're not very funny. So we need to focus on quality to get the separation from the crowd.
Thomas, how do things work in social media there? You've got a lot of photographers in different groups and things like that, like on Google Plus. I know that there's a lot of people who kind of share lists and circles of photographers. How do things kind of rise to the top? And how, you know, if let's say someone was going on to Google Plus, they didn't use it that much, how would they find kind of the really interesting photography there?
Well, there's a lot of ways. I mean, I think the easiest way is just you know, friend of a friend, like anything else in social media. I mean, you end up gravitating towards other people that are high quality photographers and are interesting and are doing interesting things, and you look at who they're following. Now Google Plus is sort of, again, to use that throw gasoline on the thing, a fire, they've sort of taken it to a whole nother degree with circle sharing, because now I can take all my photographer friends that I think are talented and that I like their work and I like to look at their stuff every day, and I can share that out to all my contacts. And then with a single click, they can then add all of those people as their friends. Now, maybe they keep them, not necessarily friends, as their follower, as somebody they follow. You know, now they can keep all of them. They can keep some of them. If they don't like landscape photography, they can get rid of those. If they don't like, you know, street photography, they can get rid of those. But it's a way that you could very rapidly distribute and share high quality lists with circle sharing of photographers, and it's been super exciting, and so many talented, I mean super talented photographers. I'm blown away every day at the talent of what they're putting up on Google Plus, and it just gets better and better.
Are you bothered, Thomas, at all about the larger talk around Google Plus about whether it's working or not working on a sort of mass scale as Facebook is?
You know, that's a debate. For me, for the photo community, it is on fire. It is the hottest thing on Google Plus. We just put out a book, the Google Plus collection, with over 200 photographers that got a lot of media attention. It was written up in a lot of the mainstream media sources on TV. You know, there's been a number of large photo walks. They just did one in Australia. We're working on one right now on June 30th. It's going to be an international photo walk in cities all over the world to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Google+. Whatever you might say about Google+ for other areas, I mean, I can't speak for people that are into hockey or people that are into whatever they're into, but for photography, it is probably the hottest place on the web right now for photographers to socialize.
Why do you think that is? What was it about that became such a big deal?
I think Google did a lot of things right. I mean, the first thing they did is they came out with a very, very beautifully laid out, attractive photograph. When they launched, Facebook's photograph was still like this little postage stamp size photo, and bigger is better. And Google, by contrast, put up this huge, beautiful, oversized photograph that a photographer could publish to their stream, you know, I don't know, four times the size of a Facebook photo at the time, or more, a beautiful one click, and it opens up full page, elegantly displayed design layout. So I think they just, from an aesthetic standpoint, got it really, really right early on. And I think that photographers were hungry for a photography community. Facebook wasn't really going after photography, I think, as much then, although they definitely are now. I think they've seen the value of photographs and photography as Google Plus has had success there. Flickr, same thing. I think Flickr just kind of was stumbling along under sort of the sleepy umbrella of Yahoo for so long, and they're picking it up. But I think that what Google Plus succeeded is, one, they had a very attractive way to view the photographs, and two, the people at Google got very involved in the community.
Let's talk a little bit about camera phones, you know, and how the cameras built into all of our smartphones have got better and better. You know, there's been a lot of predictions that, you know, with so many people using, you know, with these cameras built into phones getting better and better, there would be less point-and-shoot cameras out there. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. You know, we saw this report that still the high-end camera makers are still doing really well, despite all the new camera phones that are out there. I mean, is this just kind of a camera explosion where, you know, we're still having camera phones getting better and also, you know, the professional cameras getting better and really there's not anything going away?
I mean, I personally think it's that the technology has eliminated the hurdles that used to be there to being a photographer. A lot of people needed to try and, you know, you had to learn about f-stops and shutter speeds, and none of that is important anymore. The only hurdle to being a photographer at the moment is the ability to push a button. And the little cameras are fantastic. And, you know, the phone is a great tool because you have it with you all the time. They're not truly what allows you to become a photographer, but they eliminate perhaps 90% of the hurdle.
What about, are there any favorite kind of apps or filters that you guys have or that you would suggest for people to try out? I mean, we talked a little bit about Instagram, but are there others that you all like to use, you know, on camera phones?
I think Camera Awesome is the best app I've ever seen for any camera phone at all that SmugMug put out. I'm just blown away at the quality of that, the ability to focus and meter on, you know, different things, the large array of filters that they put together. I think that's sort of pushed camera phone apps to a new level. It's not on Android yet, but it's for the iPhone, and I'm excited about that, and I'm excited about the camera explosion. I think high-end cameras, mirrorless cameras, camera phone apps, things like Camera Awesome, I think there is a huge explosion in photography as people realize all of a sudden everyone can express themselves eloquently and beautifully with a camera. And it is becoming a new language, and with self-publishing through Instagram and Flickr and Google Plus and all these places. I love all parts of this explosion. But Camera Awesome is my favorite app on the phone.
This is sort of a personal question because of the photography that I've been doing for the last couple of years. So I graduated from a point and shoot to Micro Four Thirds. I bought Olympus EP3 that came out, I think, late last year. And I've been using that, and I sort of saw in my own photography the next level of the output that I was having. But I don't have any desire to learn the f-stops and all the other stuff that comes with the technical part of it. Do you think me as a photographer can keep graduating to higher quality without ever needing to learn as technology becomes easier, or at some point you do need to learn to sort of go deeper into it?
Yeah, you can absolutely keep graduating, but there comes a point where you will just simply run into a wall that you can't continue without a much deeper level of understanding. It, you know, having a video camera does not make you Steven Spielberg. You do need to have a bigger understanding as you become, as you sort of go after larger and deeper projects.
How important is the software? And I mean, you mentioned Photoshop, Gregor. You know, it seems like now photographers are spending maybe even more time on the post-production than they are the pre-production or the shots themselves.
There's no separation between pushing the button and Photoshop. It is as completely integral and necessary to know it and to be able to use it as it is to have a camera. So to me, when I shoot, I'm thinking not in terms of f-stops, but in terms of RGB values of 0 to 255, I look at histograms instead of anything else, and I have an understanding of how I will work with that photo in Photoshop later. So it's certainly, I think, a really essential part.
I would totally agree. I mean, Photoshop, Lightroom, the tools that we have, what people are doing with HDR and stuff like that, and you know, there's all kinds of new applications coming out all the time that do little things, and it's incredibly important. And you can do so much more in post production now, I think, than ever before, and I think that's a great thing. I've always viewed in camera stuff as sort of the traditional, in contrast to the film camera, and post production is the traditional darkroom, and the two go hand in hand together. You can't do one without the other.
One of the other interesting things that happened that I've been seeing a little bit is the sort of, I don't know, comeback, but photojournalism has taken on an added meaning. If you look at what the Boston Globe started, then the Atlantic started, New York Times has its own photography blog, now Reuters has its own photography blog, Guardian has one, or they have an app. Everybody in at least the newspaper and media space are doing that. Do you think that you are seeing a resurgence of photojournalism, and does that mean more jobs for photojournalists? Is that translating into that at this point?
You know, I don't know about the jobs part, but what I will say is that I think our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter, and I think that photography is being used as a better and better way to communicate a message very, very quickly. And, you know, it's to the point now where it's almost, I think people can communicate in photos back and forth without even using words anymore. And I think that these media outlets are using photography especially because it is so popular as a way to say something more than the written word in the past. And if you look at, for instance, say on a site like Google Plus and look at the What's Hot section that shows the most popular posts of a given day, or a lot of these sites, if you look at what is increasingly popular, they are images. And images stand out more than text, more than words. And I think you're going to continue to see images used, you know, on news sites and by journalists. And I think it's going to increasingly become an important way to tell a story.
It's what's interesting to me about this conversation is it's one I used to have a lot in the mid-90s when I was at MSNBC. I used to jump up and down in the newsroom and say, people love photography. We've got to bring great photography to people. They really love amazing pictures, you know, give me a hug. Like, I had no data. I had no real evidence of that. I just love photography, and I thought everyone else did as well. So in October of 98, we started a feature at MSNBC called The Week in Pictures. And that was the precursor to basically everything you're seeing now. In fact, Alan Taylor, who started The Big Picture at Boston, was the developer of The Week in Pictures at MSNBC. So he was the guy who coded our templates there. And he was, you know, pretty inspired, obviously, to go on and push The Big Picture. But I will tell you that last month, The Week in Pictures did its four slideshows, 8 to 12 pictures a week, four times a month. It did 100 million page views at MSNBC. So I no longer have to jump up and down and say people love photography. The data is in. It's very clear. People love photography. Now, we need to create a business model around that, but it's very clear that photography is a universal language. It's shared, you know, these apps, the accessibility of technology, what's happening in that space, all that stuff is great for our profession. We've got to get smart about how we, you know, position our profession, the craftsmanship side of our profession, and create a good business model around it. But the fact that everybody loves it is hugely on our side.
Yeah, MSNBC definitely deserves a lot of credit for being there, you know, for really pushing images and photography, you know, ahead of a lot of other people. And I mean, you
not
think
even
about
video even before.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, you think about what you can do online and what you can do on screens and these bigger screens. I mean, you are always on a newspaper or a magazine. You're always limited to the size of what your print product was, and the fact that you can kind of, things can be blown up on these bigger screens, you know, on tablets and all that. It's just there's a lot of potential for really interesting bigger images.
I think we're right on the edge of another big leap. The leap that we saw in video from DV to HDV was a big deal. That was 720x480 to 1920x1080. So that was a massive resolution explosion. And the next leap is going to be to either 2K or 4K. I think it's going to be to 4K. And 4K is going to be absolutely stunning. And the debate is, okay, there's no playback devices for it. But when you look at what Apple's doing with Retina, I would argue that Apple is actually positioning itself to be the 4K playback via computer. And I think, you know, we're going to see this big, big jump. And that's going to be a big jump in cameras, a big jump in hard drives, a big jump in computing power. But we're going to see that in the next year, that 4K emerges and becomes an important format. And that's not, that's really going to separate from your iPhone app. You know what I mean? Because the resolution is just going to be so dramatically different. The fidelity of it is going to be so dramatically different.
Well, thanks, guys. It's been a really good discussion. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank our co-host and birthday boy, Rafat Ali, as well as our special guests, Gregor Holenda, Thomas Hawk, Brian Storm. And we want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab and our news site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. We'll catch you next week.